Today is Thursday, August 13th, and this is the World Socialist Website. Ankara plane incident shows panic and disorientation of Trump White House, by Patrick Martin. A report published by the Washington Post Monday, detailing how President Donald Trump secretly switched planes for his July 8th flight out of Ankara, Turkey, after the NATO summit, has touched off a political uproar in Washington. Trump boarded Air Force One, then left the plane surreptitiously with a handful of close aides, and was taken in a catering truck to a military C-32A jet. This action was supposedly proposed by the Secret Service after intelligence reports suggested a credible threat from an Iranian soldier-fired ground-to-air missile. A subsequent report in the New York Times claimed that Iranian agents had identified the building where Trump was staying during the NATO meeting, including the exact floor. Nothing disclosed by the White House and Pentagon, as well as leaked to corporate media outlets like the Post and the Times, can be taken at face value, above all, the claim that Iran was seeking to shoot down Air Force One. It is more than likely that this claim originates in the Netanyahu regime in Israel, which has been raising claims of Iranian assassination plots against Trump as a reason for resuming full-scale bombing of Iran. The Trump administration could use this allegation as the pretext for all-out invasion. But the sequence of events involving Trump's own movements reveals, first and foremost, the panic and hysteria now gripping the administration. If Trump truly believed his life was in danger if he flew out of Ankara on Air Force One, what could justify a decision to allow the press corps and numerous high-ranking officials to take that risk? Why was the flight not canceled entirely and alternate means of secure transportation developed? Instead, Trump and a few personal aides were rushed out of danger. These included Natalie Harp, whose role as executive assistant is to print out flattering press commentaries for Trump to read, Walt Nauta, his valet, and Dan Scavino, a White House deputy chief of staff, whose principal job is to write up and post Trump's screeds on Truth Social and X. Except for Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, who joined Trump on the military jet, all other top officials who attended the NATO summit flew out of Ankara on Air Force One. These included Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Secretary of the Treasury Scott Bessent, as well as top White House aides like Stephen Miller, Deputy Chief of Staff and Counterterrorism Chief, and Stephen Chung, the Communications Director. As for the traveling press pool, consisting of dozens of reporters, producers, and technicians, their lives were treated with complete contempt. Those aboard Air Force One were not simply left in danger through negligence. In effect, they were assigned a military function to serve as unwitting decoys, to draw enemy fire, to be the target in the president's place. What if the plane had been hit by a missile and destroyed, taking more than 100 people with it while Trump made a cowardly escape? The political repercussions for the president, the man who has, in the media parlance, his finger on the nuclear button, would have been catastrophic. Even the belly-crawling Democratic Party leaders would not have been able to save him. As it is, the episode is a political humiliation for American imperialism. If the press accounts are true, the President of the United States had to steal away from the capital of a NATO country like a thief in the night. This shows the bogus character of Trump's claim that Iran has been destroyed militarily and is eager to negotiate on U.S. terms. As for the faux outrage over Iran's alleged threats to assassinate Trump, it should never be forgotten that the first action of the joint U.S.-Israeli sneak attack on Iran was to use bomb and missile strikes to exterminate the top leadership of the Islamic Republic, including Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei and most of his family, children and grandchildren among them. This was followed by the deliberate bombing of a school near the Strait of Hormuz, in which more than 160 schoolgirls and their teachers were killed. Yet Iran did not surrender to these terrorist attacks, as Trump predicted, and had found, by closing the Strait of Hormuz a point of economic leverage, which the most powerful imperialist government has been unable to offset. The war has dragged on, with intermittent ceasefires to allow the U.S. to replenish its weaponry. The U.S. ruling elite and the European imperialist powers increasingly regard the war as a misbegotten failure. Recent press reports indicate that the military brass is becoming more concerned that the stockpiles of anti-missile systems and other weapons are on the brink of exhaustion, rendering the U.S. less able to launch wars against more powerful countries than Iran, such as Russia and China. This is not merely a matter of Trump's personal cowardice and callousness, revolting as they are. It exemplifies the outlook of the entire ruling class. The oligarchy that orders wars in which thousands are killed, more than 3,400 Iranians, among them hundreds of children, more than 73,000 Palestinians in Gaza, 18 American soldiers, whose deaths the Pentagon then tried to erase from its records, regards human life as the cost of doing business. What the plane episode reveals is the relationship of the parasitic financial aristocracy to the population as a whole. Their own safety is paramount and inviolable. Everyone else is expendable. In the aftermath of the exposure, the Trump administration has returned to the policy of lies and stonewalling demonstrated so grotesquely in Ankara. The Secret Service referred questions to the White House and the Pentagon. The Pentagon referred questions to the White House. The communications director of the White House, Stephen Chung, defended the actions taken, writing, quote, "As the president has said recently, there are many enemies of America who have their sights on him, and we use every tool at our disposal to address those threats," unquote. It should also be recalled that on the day after he returned to the United States from Ankara, Trump declared that he had given orders that if he were to be assassinated, Iran was to be destroyed by bombing on an unprecedented scale, a scarcely veiled threat on the use of nuclear weapons. He claimed that 1,000 missiles were, quote, "locked and loaded and aimed at the Islamic Republic of Iran, with thousands more to immediately follow," unquote. At the same time, the White House denounced the New York Times for reporting problems with the Qatari jet that has been given to Trump to serve as his new Air Force One, going so far as to have the FBI issue subpoenas to all the reporters involved, with agents visiting their homes and even accosting family members. The Pentagon also revoked the security clearance of former Secretary of the Air Force Frank Kendall for allegedly sharing information about Air Force One with the media. What really happened in Ankara remains unclear, but the crisis of the Trump administration and of American imperialism as a whole is unmistakable. The U.S. ruling class faces both a geopolitical debacle in the war with Iran and a mounting social confrontation with the working class at home. Democratic Primary Elections Show Volatility Amid Shift to the Left, by Barry Gray. U.S. primary elections were held Tuesday in six states: Wisconsin, Minnesota, Alabama, South Carolina, Vermont, and Connecticut. The two most watched and hotly contested contests were in Wisconsin and Minnesota. In Wisconsin, the Democratic Party establishment mounted a ferocious campaign in the run-up to the vote to prevent a victory in the gubernatorial primary by Francesca Hong, a self-described socialist and member of the Democratic Socialists of America, or DSA. Hong, a state lawmaker, campaigned on a program of Medicare for all, abolishing ICE, and raising taxes on the rich. She was far ahead in the polls and widely predicted to prevail easily against David Crowley, the Milwaukee County Executive. Crowley, a so-called moderate, was backed by outgoing Democratic Governor Tony Evers, House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, and the entire party establishment. Crowley managed to eke out a narrow victory by a margin of 0.4%, or some 3,200 votes. He will now face Trump-endorsed Republican Congressman Tom Tiffany, a member of the far-right House Freedom Caucus, in the general election in November. Hong and Crowley traded narrow leads throughout the night, making the race too close to call when the candidates ended their election watch parties after midnight. A reported error in uploading absentee ballot data in Milwaukee, Crowley's base, caused a delay in reporting that pushed off the final results until Milwaukee's absentee numbers were added to the totals. Hong called Crowley to concede shortly after 2 a.m. Wednesday, and later in the day declared her full support for his campaign. She did not exercise her right for a recount. The events leading up to the vote reflect the systematic intervention of the party establishment to shift the election to the detriment of Hong. Crowley dropped out of the primary in July, after trailing in polling and weak fundraising. He endorsed Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, who shortly after withdrew, citing campaign fundraising irregularities. At that point, Crowley re-entered the race, and Evers, who said he would not make an endorsement, declared his support and proceeded to campaign with Crowley across the state. Former Lieutenant Governor Mondala Barnes quit the race less than 2 weeks before the primary, effectively ceding his votes to Crowley. In the final weeks of the election, with Evers' help, Crowley's fundraising surpassed Hong's. Significantly, neither Bernie Sanders, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, nor the DSA endorsed Hong, effectively abetting the party establishment's efforts to block her. The day before the primary, Crowley told the Wall Street Journal that to win statewide, a coalition of not just Democrats, but Republicans and independents was needed. He continued, quote, "There are a lot of people who are scared. She is a self-proclaimed socialist. There are a lot of people worried about not just this party, but this country moving in that direction." The corporate press celebrated Hong's defeat. The Wall Street Journal, alluding to Democratic primary victories by DSA and DSA-backed candidates in New York, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Denver, and Detroit, wrote that Crowley had, quote, "stopped progressive momentum." The New York Times wrote of the Wisconsin primary, quote, "showing the limits of the progressive movement and allowing mainstream Democrats to breathe a sigh of relief." It added, quote, "but in Wisconsin, the polling was wrong. The socialists met their match." What concerns the Democratic Party and its corporate sponsors is not Hong herself or other socialists and progressives within the party, who they know are entirely subservient to the capitalist system and U.S. imperialism. What terrifies them is the growing radicalization and sympathy for socialism on the part of masses of workers and youth that finds an initial and distorted expression in the electoral victories of these forces. The virulently hostile response of the Democratic establishment to DSA-backed socialists and progressives who claim that the Democratic Party can become a workers' party and who seek to bind mass opposition from below to the Democrats exposes the bankruptcy of the political perspective of the DSA and the rest of the pseudo-left. In Minnesota, mass anger against the anti-immigrant rampage and the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, Gestapo, propelled the progressive candidate in the Democratic senatorial primary, Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, to victory over incumbent Congresswoman Angie Craig. In the state where ICE's police state occupation and murder of Renee Nicole Good and Alex Pretty sparked mass demonstrations and demands for a general strike, Flanagan attacked Craig for voting in favor of the Lake and Riley Act, which requires immigration detention for undocumented immigrants accused of local crimes. In November, Flanagan will face Republican Michelle Tafoya, a former NFL sideline reporter, in the contest to fill the seat of retiring Democratic Senator Tina Smith. In the Democratic fight to fill Angie Craig's House seat, Matt Little, a former state senator, defeated State Representative Kayla Berg and State Senator Matt Klein. Little campaigned for Medicare for All and against the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or IPAC, in the construction of data centers. He was endorsed by Texas Representative Greg Cesar, chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. Little will face Republican State Senator Eric Pratt in the November general election.
This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist Website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.